Okay, this week's parasha is Parasha Shmos. Pretty much everything we're going to be talking about tonight is comments from the Sefer Be'er Yosef. So the first thing that we're going to focus on tonight is on page 298. So, Vayihi Bayamim Haheim, it was in those days, Vayigdal Moshe Vayetzei Alechav, Moshe grew up, he went out to his brothers, Vayar B'Sivil Eisam, and he saw their hard labor, Vayar Ish Mitzri, and he saw an Egyptian man, Mak Ish Ivri Me'echav, beating a Hebrew man from his brothers. Vayif Ben Koy V'Choy, he looked here and there, Vayar Ki Ein Ish, he saw there was no man, Vayachas HaMitzri, and he smote the Mitzri, v'itmenei b'chol, and he hit him in the sand. Okay, so Rashi tells us that this situation here of the Ish Mitzri beating the man, the Hebrew man, the Hebrew slave, was that this Ish Mitzri was a taskmaster. He was in charge of the slaves, and he was beating a slave, a Hebrew slave, and. Basically, his job was, this Ish Mitzri's job, Rashi says, was to, he was in charge of the other Jewish officers who were in charge of the slaves. And basically, he would arouse them. He'd get them up in the morning to go to work. And he was hitting the Ish Ivri, Rashi says. He was beating him. He was oppressing him. And Rashi tells us that the background here is, what was really going on here is, was that this Hebrew slave was the husband of a woman named Shlemis Bas Divri. And this Egyptian taskmaster took a liking to her. At night, he got the man, aroused the man up to go ahead to get to work. And basically, he entered his house and he cohabited with his wife, Kasvura Shibaila. And she thought that it was her husband. The man returned to his house and he realized something was going on. When the Egyptian man saw that this Hebrew slave, the husband of this woman, realized something had happened, so basically he was beating him a whole day. So then Rashi tells us, Moshe Rabbeinu looked here and there. What does it mean here and there? So Rashi says, Ra'a ma'asa le'babayis. Moshe Rabbeinu saw what the Egyptian did in the person's house. Vuma asalay basadam, what he's doing to him in the field.
How do they know everything?
So the Medrash says he knew it through Ruach HaKodesh. He knew it through the power of prophecy, what had happened. So basically looking here and there means that he realized what had happened in the person's house, what was going on in the field, and he saw there was no man. So Rashi on these words, he saw there was no man. Famous Rashi that Moshe saw that out of this Egyptian man, no convert would ever come, no righteous person would ever come, and therefore he killed him. Now, it is interesting to note that, let's read out a little bit further. He went out on the next day, there were two men fighting, quarreling. And he said to the evil one, why do you beat your friend? Vayomer, so this person responded, Misamach l'ishtar v'shefet olenu. Who made you an officer and a judge over us? Hadargeni ato'imer. Are you saying to kill me, kasharaknes ha-mitzri, as you kill the Egyptian? Vayra Moshe vayomer. Moshe was fearful and he said, Ocheina da hadavar. The truth is, the matter is known. So Rashi tells us, who are these two people fighting? Dasan and Avirim. The famous Dasan and Avirim that made trouble throughout the years in the desert. These are the two men fighting. Rashi points out that Moshe says, Lama Saka, why will you hit? Which means that he did not yet hit him. He had just raised his hand to hit him. And Moshe still basically said to him, Moshe Rabbeinu, the Torah refers to him as a Rasha because of the fact that he, even though he did not yet strike him, he just raised his hand to strike him. And then on the words, Alahargeni Ataimer, are you saying to kill me? Which is an interesting way. Are you saying to kill me? So Mikan Anu Lamedim Shargu B'Shem Mefarish. The fact that this person said to Moshe, are you saying to kill me as you killed the Egyptian? Sounds like, are you saying to kill me? You're going to kill me what you're saying as you did to the Egyptian. Which means that Moshe killed the Egyptian not with his hands, but rather he pronounced the holy name of Hashem, and using that, he killed the Egyptian.
How?
By using that name, that's how he killed him.
Not with a stone,
not with his hands, by pronouncing the Shema Mefarish, especially the name of Hashem, and using that to bring his death.
Did he know he could
do that? Now, the question, what?
Did he know he had the power to do that?
If he used it, it means he had the power.
What new power he has.
He realized he had the power to use it. So Rashi, Bar Yosef asks, why did Moshe Rabbeinu have to kill this person using the Shema Mefarish, the special name? The Bar Yosef doesn't want to assume that Moshe Rabbeinu was too weak to kill him. He assumes that Moshe Rabbeinu was now young, he was strong, and he should at least been able to have done something. It shouldn't have been necessary to have to say the special name of Hashem, uttering the special name of Hashem, to kill the person. And he brings down that there are other opinions brought down in the Medrash that say that Moshe Rabbeinu did actually kill him with his hands, meaning he physically killed him. But there is this opinion that says that no, he did not. He used the holy name of Hashem. And the Bar Yosef says it would seem that according to that opinion, that he used the name of Hashem to kill the Mitzri, that's what he intentionally wanted to use. He was not going to use his hands, but rather he was going to use the Shem refers to a special name. But at the end of the day, the question is, that's not typically the way that you kill someone. Why did he do so? So the Gemara in Sanhedrin talks about, says the following halacha. The Gemara says, Akum Shikas Yisrael Chayev Misa. If a non-Jew strikes a Jew, he's liable for death. Shenema, as the Pasuk says, Vayiv en Koy Vachoy Vayarki Enish Vayachas Amitzri. The Gemara quotes this episode where Moshe looks here and there, he sees there's no person, and he smites the Mitzri. So the Mitzri is hitting the Hebrew slave. That's an example of Akum Shehika Es Yisrael. A non-Jew who beat a Jew, and Moshe killed him. So you see that a non-Jew, a Benayach, a non-Jew who beats a Jew, is Chayiv Misa. So what you would see from the Gemara is that why, if Moshe killed him, right? Why did he kill him? Why did he kill him? The Mitzri was beating this man. Why did he kill the Mitzri? What right did Moshe have to kill the Egyptian for beating the man? So the Gemara seems to say, you're right, he was beating him. From here we actually see that a non-Jew that beats a Jew is Chayiv Misa. That's why Moshe killed him. Now, the Rambam, when he cites this halacha, says that the non-Jew who beats a Jew is Chayiv Misa, is liable for a death penalty, but he's not killed. Meaning there's no capital punishment. The Beis Din in Eretz Yisrael would not get involved to put him to death. It would mean that he would die in the hands of Shemayim. Heaven would take care of him. But it's not something that actually the Beis Din gets involved and performs capital punishment on him. So according to the Rambam, that's what's happened with the liability that comes to the obligation, the punishment that comes to the guy, the non-Jew who's hitting the Jew, is not a punishment by means of capital punishment, but it means that Shemayim, heaven, will take care of him.
What about a Jew killing another Jew?
That's a whole different halacha. This is halacha right now of a guy not killing. We're not talking about killing right now necessarily. Mm-hmm. Right now, it doesn't say he killed him. It says Makkah. He was beating him.
Yeah.
He was beating him. It's interesting that when Moshe hits the Mitzri, right, it says also Vayach, which means he hit. But we know that hitting killed him because Moshe buried him in the sand.
Right.
So.
Wait, maybe not killed him. Maybe he was still alive. Buried in the sand.
He didn't make it after that.
No.
Now, according to the Rambam, so it comes out the Gemara is saying that Moshe Rabbeinu is killing the Mitzri because the Mitzri was beating the Jew, and that's what happens to a non-Jew who beats a Jew. But if the Rambam says there is no capital punishment, it's a misa bidei shamayim, it's something that heaven takes care of, then why did Moshe kill him? If it's supposed to be misa bidei shamayim, death by the hands of heaven, why did Moshe kill him? Moshe seemingly, you know, where's Moshe's right to do that? Okay, now the Bar Yosef then cites another medrash that actually says that when Moshe Rabbeinu saw the Egyptian beating this Hebrew slave, Moshe Rabbeinu said, he's going to kill him. He wants to kill him. He's beating him in a way that he wants to kill him. And therefore Moshe said, he wants to kill him, then I can kill him. So according to this medrash, we're not talking about just hitting. We're talking about he was trying to kill him, which is different than the Gemara and Sanhedrin. And the commentaries say that if that's so, that the Egyptian was trying to kill the Hebrew slave, then Moshe Rabbeinu's right to kill the Egyptian was because the Egyptian was called a rodef. A rodef means if you see someone trying to kill someone else, you're allowed to kill that person. So therefore, Moshe went ahead and killed the Egyptian because he was a rodef. He was trying to kill somebody else. You see, A is trying to kill B, you're allowed to kill A. Now, the thing is, though, says the Bar Yosef, and he kind of brings up this question, well, did Moshe Rabbeinu really have to kill the Egyptian? I mean, we know that if you can stop the person from killing without killing him, you can stop A from killing B without having to kill A. That's what you're supposed to do.
We knew next week or next month it would
probably come again. Says the Bar Yosef that even if right now, right, Moshe Rabbeinu could stop him, but Moshe Rabbeinu figured if now it doesn't work, he's going to try to get him a different time. Exactly, that's what the Bar Yosef says. Excuse me?
He was trying to kill him going back to the wife, because this way if he's dead, he's not going to have to worry about the husband if he's going to go after his wife.
Well, I don't know, either that or just because of the fact that he didn't want, I don't know if he was going to do it again as much as just the fact that the husband realized what happened. Mm-hmm. But whatever the reason may be, the Bar Yosef says that Moshe Rabbeinu, if you're going to ask, well, could Moshe Rabbeinu just stop him? Why do you have to kill him for that? The answer is, even if you're correct to say you could have stopped him now, who says he's going to be around the next time that he tries? And therefore, you already figured now he had the right to kill him. But again, that's all approaching. That's an approach. So that's the approach of the Medrash that says that when the Egyptian was hitting the Hebrew slave, that what was happening there was that Moshe realized, the Medrash says, Moshe said he's going to kill him. So therefore, Moshe was killing the Egyptian because he was trying to kill the Hebrew slave. And therefore, he had that was his right to do it. But that's not what the Gemara seems to say. The Gemara seems to say it's a whole different. The Gemara seems to say he was not trying to kill him. He was beating him. But a non-Jew who beats a Jew is chay of mis, is liable to death penalty. The Rambam says it's a misa b'dei shemayim, something that heaven takes care of. Then why did Moshe Rabbeinu kill him? Now, then says the Bar Yosef, but we really do have another angle to come at. For a reason why Moshe should have a right to possibly kill the Egyptian man, and that is because the Egyptian man committed adultery. She wasn't at fault, she had no idea, but he committed adultery. A Ben Noach, even a Gentile, is not allowed to commit adultery. So perhaps Moshe Rabbeinu's right to go ahead and to kill him was to carry out the kind of punishment that he was deserving for committing adultery. Says the Bar Yosef, we have a problem with that. Because the issue really here is that how does anybody really know that he did it? If you say that Moshe Rabbeinu knew it from prophecy, you can't kill a Ben Noach based on prophecy. You got to have a witness. You have to have witnesses. You could have at least one witness. So now you could have one witness, and even the husband could be a witness. Meaning if a husband were to catch his wife committing adultery with another man, his testimony could be enough to give them punishment, by a Ben Noach at least, by a Gentile. So perhaps it was the husband. But says the Bar Yosef, it doesn't sound like the husband actually caught them.
Right.
It seems that the Egyptian had already left, and he actually cites a medrash that says that he saw the Egyptian leave, and he asked her, did he do anything to you? And she said, I thought it was you.
Right.
So basically, that's how he figured out what's going on, but that isn't testimony. That's not testimony. He didn't actually witness the fact that they committed adultery. And even when she says, well, I thought it was you, is that enough testimony to say that we can punish this person for committing adultery? And then he says that even if you could say from her part it was, but she's a woman. And she can't be a witness against a woman can't be a witness against a Gentile when we're carrying out the seven Noahide laws. And therefore, so the thing is to go ahead and now say that he's liable for a death penalty for committing adultery, there has to be some kind of testimony, and we don't have it here. So therefore, says the Bar Yosef, what we're going to have to say is like this. What we're going to have to say is that, in essence, as the Rambam said, why is it that if a non-Jew beats a Jew, and the Gemara says he's liable to a death penalty, the Rambam says it's misa b'dei shamayim, it's a death penalty by through heaven. It's not carried out by man. And the adultery that was committed here, not enough testimony to kill him for that. But says the Bar Yosef, when Moshe doesn't kill him with his hands, but he kills him with Hashem's name, that's the equivalent of Misa B'dei Shemayim. That is the fulfillment. That's a form of Misa B'dei Shemayim, a Misa by the hands of heaven.
So it had to be true for him to be able to kill him.
So Moshe, according to the Gemara, has the right to kill him because it's a non-Jew beating a Jew. And even though that can't be carried out as capital punishment, which means, you know, Moshe couldn't necessarily physically do anything to him, but by uttering Hashem's name to bring the person, to bring his demise, that was a form of Misa B'dei Shemayim. That was a form of death by the hands of heaven. So therefore, says the Bar Yosef, we could explain the Pasuk, at least, you know, starting off with the first half. And the Pasuk says, Moshe Rabbeinu looked here and there. Rashi says, he looked, he saw what he did in his house, and he saw what he did in the field. Vayar ki einish, but he saw there was no man. So the Bar Yosef says, what that means is like this. There was no man means there was no witness.
Oh, no witness.
And since there was no witness, what he did in the house, nothing could happen because of that. But what he did in the field of beating him, for that he was liable to Misa. He was liable to a death penalty, by a death penalty by the hands of heaven, by Moshe Rabbeinu actually now using Hashem's name to kill him. That was a fulfillment, that was a form of death by the hands of heaven. So when we ask our question, why did Moshe have to kill him in this very unconventional way, it was because that's the only way he could kill him. The only way Moshe could kill the man for beating the Hebrew slave was because since he was only liable to Misa B'dei Shemayim, to death penalty by the hands of heaven, the only way he could kill him would be by uttering Hashem's name. He wouldn't be able to physically kill him. That would be too close to, that would be too much. That's not death by heaven. That's him killing him. But if he utters Hashem's name, and through that, that's how the person dies, that was considered a form of dying by the hands of heaven, and therefore he was able to do that. And he wanted to do that. I would add, Moshe wanted to kill the Egyptian, even if the Egyptian was trying to kill the Hebrew slave, but as he says, he was beating him and making him crazy a whole day. This Egyptian wasn't going to leave this Hebrew slave alone. So Moshe Rabbeinu wanted, so to speak, bring about heaven's punishment upon him, because he wanted to get him to stop beating him. He was liable to a punishment by the hands of heaven, and Moshe Rabbeinu evoked that. Moshe Rabbeinu brought that about, that death by through heaven, by uttering Hashem's name.
But what about if somebody has the same thought about Shemayim? He's killed by Shemayim, but what if he's not killed like a week, a month later? If you still feel he's... If Moshe felt by Shemayim, he should...
That's up to Shemayim when to do it.
What?
If Moshe doesn't do anything, that's up to Shemayim when Shemayim decides to do it.
If it's not done, then it's Shemayim.
Right. Moshe Rabbeinu was kind of, in this case, getting involved, but he was getting involved in the sense of bringing about the Misa B'dei Shemayim, the Mithra through heaven, by uttering Hashem's name. I think we need to say that Moshe Rabbeinu decided to get himself involved like that because he wanted to get the Egyptian to stop beating the Hebrew slave. That had to stop. That was only going to stop by killing him. Okay. So, according to this, it comes out good. The second thing that Rashi brings down, which is that Moshe Rabbeinu saw that no ger, no convert was going to come from this Egyptian, and therefore he killed him. Now, if the Egyptian is deserving of an actual death penalty, a regular death penalty, then why would a descendant, a righteous descendant, make a difference? If he's liable, he's liable. The answer is, he's not regularly liable. He's liable bidei shamayim. It's not that we have an obligation to kill him. It's up to heaven to kill him. Now the question is, would Moshe Rabbeinu now bring about that heavenly punishment? In that kind of situation, we can say, Moshe Rabbeinu saw. If Moshe Rabbeinu would have seen that a righteous descendant would have come from this man, he wouldn't have gotten involved. He would have let this man do what he has to do, and Hashem would have taken care of it.
So he knew, he could see the future.
He could see the future through Ruach HaKodesh, through prophecy.
Because basically, he could have. I mean, he had a relationship with a Jewish woman. If she had Sadiq's children.
Whether it's from this woman, whether it's from somebody else.
Mm-hmm, right.
Kind of hard to say it would come from this woman, but whatever it was, the point is, was there going to be a righteous descendant from this person? Once Moshe Rabbeinu saw that, he didn't, wasn't afraid now, so to speak, to invoke the heavenly punishment. But if we're talking about a capital punishment, we're talking about actual punishment, you don't usually find that kind of concept. Well, maybe something righteous is going to come from him.
Right.
That's usually not an, that's not going to be an issue. Says the Bar Yosef, it comes out well that Moshe Rabbeinu here was doing that because Moshe Rabbeinu is dealing with Shemayim here. And therefore, in Shemayim calculations, so to speak, in Shemayim Cheshbonos, this can make sense. Another interesting thing that the Bar Yosef concludes with on this idea was the Bar Yosef says that when Moshe looks here and there, as Rashi says, here means what the Egyptian did in the man's house. Here or there means that he sees what the Egyptian is beating the Hebrew slave. He saw there's no man. Rashi says, no man means no righteous descendant. The Bar Yosef said, no man means there's no witness. And if there's no witness, he can't do anything. Says the Bar Yosef that what we could actually say is like this. We could take it from a different angle when explaining that he saw no man means there's no witness. And he says like this. He says that in essence, again, there was no testimony on the adultery. He couldn't get him for the adultery. For beating the Hebrew slave, right? For beating the Hebrew slave. Well, I shouldn't say it like that. I'm jumping the gun. For beating the Hebrew slave, Moshe is not going to be able to stop him. This man was a taskmaster, right? He was in charge of slaves or in charge of the officers over slaves. If he starts beating the, when this Egyptian was beating the Hebrew slave, what was his official reason for beating him? He was saying, you're not doing your job, you're not doing your work. So he was able to cover up what he was doing by saying, you're not doing your work. Moshe can't do anything about that. However, from the point of the adultery, if there would have been a witness, then that would have been enough to have gotten this Egyptian in trouble. Meaning, if there would have been a witness to the adultery that the Egyptian committed, Moshe Rabbeinu could have gone back to Paro and could have said, look, this guy committed adultery. And as much as we know that the Egyptians were extremely immoral, but there were still rules. They didn't allow that kind of stuff. If that kind of stuff came out in the open, you were punished for it. You were punished for it. So, Vayar Ki Einish, says the Bar Yosef, he saw there was no man, means to say, he saw there was no witness. But now that there's no witness, now he can't do anything about the adultery. If there was a witness, then what he could have done about the adultery is he could have gone to Paro. And Paro would have gotten this guy out of the way. But now, right, that would have been the first choice. But now that there was no witness to get this guy for adultery, and he really can't get the guy because he's an officer. How does he have the power? You know, he's an officer. Moshe Rabbeinu at this point was a powerful person. He grew up in the palace. He was right. He was considered like Pharaoh's son. He had power. But he couldn't use that power against the Egyptian for hitting him because he just couldn't. The Egyptian has an excuse why he's doing it. But for the adultery, if there would have been a witness, then he could have done something. He could have used Paro to get rid of the Egyptian. Now that there wasn't, he couldn't get rid of the Egyptian. Therefore, he took it in his own hands. Okay, so that's the Bar Yosef's.
Paro, that would take him. He wouldn't have to worry a week or 2 weeks.
Right.
To do it again. He'll
right.
Be out of the picture.
Right. So therefore, this is how the Bar Yosef explains, you know, this whole episode with Moshe killing the Egyptian. We either have one approach to say that Moshe killed the Egyptian because Moshe knew the Egyptian was trying to kill the Hebrew slave. And if the Egyptian is trying to kill the slave, Moshe Rabbeinu can stop him from killing another person. He can stop him from doing that. And the Bar Yosef actually says that the opinions that say that Moshe actually killed him with his hands, not with Hashem's name, he says, you know, that may perhaps they were learning, well, so where did Moshe have a right to actually kill him? What was the basis? The answer is, because he was a Rodef. They would have to be learning that the Egyptian was actually trying to kill the Hebrew slave, and that was Moshe Rabbeinu's right to kill him, to stop him. Or the other approach, as the Gemara says, is that the Egyptian was liable for hitting the fellow Jew, for hitting the Jew. That gives him a liability, makes him liable for a death punishment. But it's a death punishment by it through heavenly decree. And Moshe Rabbeinu, based by using Hashem's name to kill the Egyptian, was not carrying out a form of capital punishment in some way, or that Moshe Rabbeinu was killing him, but that was how Moshe Rabbeinu was bringing about the heavenly decree. By using Hashem's name to kill him, that was a form of Misa B'Day Shemayim, a form of death through heaven. Now, after this, we have the next episode, which is Moshe Rabbeinu sees two Jews that are fighting, and he goes to one and he says, Rosh, Lama Sakariyecha, why are you hitting your brother? So, what does this person say back to him? Basically, who made you an officer and a judge over us? Are you going to kill me like you killed the Egyptian? Now, first of all, you know, if this person who was getting into a fight was trying to tell Moshe, mind your own business, you know, if that's what he meant, he doesn't have to say, who made you a judge and an officer on us? Who's being a judge? Who's being an officer? I'm one Jew to another Jew. I'm telling you, doing something wrong. You want to tell me to bug off? You want to tell me this is my own business? What's that got to do with being a sar v'shefei? What's that got to do with being a judge?
Did you knew Moshe was Jewish?
Yeah.
I know. The two people said the same thing, Moshe?
It says the one that he spoke to.
Uh-huh.
It says the one that he accused, when he says, why are you hitting your friend? Right. He responded. Now, another thing, and another question is that what made him think Moshe was going to kill him? Just because he saw Moshe kill an Egyptian yesterday means he's going to kill him? Why?
He's capable.
But why would he think? Why would he say that to him? Why would he think he's going to kill him? So the Rabbi Yosef says that the Gemara I mentioned before about a non-Jew who hits a Jew is liable to death penalty, which is the Sanhedrin, in Chesam and Beis, actually says the following thing. The Gemara there says, if you raise your hand against your friend, you're called a Rasha. Why? Because the pasuk here says, Moshe says, "Vayomer l'Rasha." Moshe says to the evil one, "Lama sakari echa?" Why saka is really a future tense. Why are you planning on? Why will you hit your friend? Why are you planning on hitting your friend? Which means he didn't hit him yet. He just was in the process of it. So you see from here, if you raise your hand to hit someone, you're called a Rasha. There's a Gemara there that says if you slap a fellow Jew, it's like slapping the Shechina. It's like slapping the divine presence. We say every person is created in the image of Hashem, but the Jewish people represent Hashem's image the most. And therefore, you slap a fellow Jew, you're like slapping the Shechina. You raise your hand up against a fellow Jew, you're an evil person. It's the same idea. You're holding up your hand against the Jew.
Man, either one.
That you're holding up your hand to hit someone, you're gripping, you're going to hit another Jew, hitting the Shechina. You called a Rasha. Another opinion of the Gemara says that a person who raises his hand against a fellow Jew should have his hand cut off. And the Gemara says that there was one sage who actually cut off a man's hand. Rashi says that this man kept hitting, and Rashi says that when he cut off his hand, Rashi says it was not min hadin, this was not the letter of the law. But Rashi says the sages in their times had the right to do things if they felt it was needed. And this man was out of hand. So they stopped him. Then the Gemara says that the person who raises his hand against a fellow Jew, there's no solution for him other than burial. Which Rashi says means, that for raising the hand against a fellow Jew, he deserves to die. He deserves to be buried.
For what reason?
What do you mean for what reason?
Well, let's say the fellow Jew just killed his wife or killed.
No, we're talking about a person who doesn't have a reason to protect himself.
No.
We're talking about a person who is attacking someone else, or a person maybe getting in a fight with someone and he's already and he's turning to violence. So that's the person. So a person who raises a hand against a fellow, that was this case, right? In this case, they were fighting. It says
we don't know why.
We don't know why, but they were fighting. And it's clearly not a situation where you can, where it was a need to protect himself through hitting the person. And therefore, Moshe called him, he was called a Rasha. And the Gemara says that person is deserving of burial. He deserves to die. Now, again, that doesn't mean that, you know, you can, there, that Bezdin is going to get involved and give him capital punishment. It would mean that, again, it's a heavenly, he's deserving of a heavenly decree of death. So says the Rabbi Yosef, that the person, again, this is not the Navi who are fighting. So the one that was raised, that Moshe called, said to, called him a Rasha for raising his hand, he says to Moshe, "You're going to kill me?" Meaning, the Gemara says that when you raise your hand against a fellow Jew, you're deserving of death. So are you going to kill me? Are you going to kill me, says said Nadav, or whoever it was. Are you going to kill me like you killed the Egyptian? As Rashi points out here, this is where we see the Moshe killed him with, the killed the Egyptian with the Shem Mefarish, with the name of Hashem. And that's what this Rashi was saying to Moshe. Are you going to kill me the same way? Meaning, and says the Bar Yosef, like we said before, are you going to carry out the Misibidei Shamayim? Are you going to carry out the heavenly decree of death on me now for raising my hand against a fellow Jew, just like you carried it out on the Egyptian? And therefore he says to him also, who made you a judge? Now again, this is not a judge, because this is not capital punishment. But it means, basically, they're saying to him, like, you know, you're putting yourself in charge of carrying out punishments like a judge. Who made you that judge? And are you going to kill me? Are you going to really carry out what the Gemara says, that if you raise your hand against a fellow Jew, that you're Chayav Misa, are you going to carry that out against me like you did with the Egyptian? So it's very interesting how this all comes together.
Do you think maybe it was done for Moshe's sake to show him other people know that he killed the person, he should leave Egypt, because now
we don't find that Moshe was trying to leave Egypt this way. He had to run away when they told him.
But when they told him, that means other people knew about it too.
Well, so but they were the ones who went to Paro. We only find that Moshe had to leave because they told Paro. I don't know if anybody's after. What do you mean after before?
Well, he said they were fighting.
They're fighting. One raised his hand. Yeah. Moshe said, "Why are you hitting him, right, Russia?" He says back to him, "You're going to kill me like you killed." And after that, they went to Paro.
And that's when Moshe left. Which they gave Moshe a chance to get away. Because
I don't know of anybody who learns that they were trying to give him a chance to get away. It was Moshe Rabbeinu who needed to flee. Mm-hmm. Now, so this is how the Bar Yosef puts this all together. Again, what is the reason that he says to Moshe, "Are you going to kill me?" What's the basis? The answer is, the basis is what the Gemara says, that you're worthy of being killed. And for that, he says to Moshe, "Are you going to kill me like you killed the Egyptian? Are you going to carry out a heavenly decree like you did with the Egyptian?"
Which you're entitled to.
Which theoretically you could be entitled to, yeah, theoretically. But he was kind of challenging him, like, you know, are you really going to do that to me? Moshe didn't say anything.
Right, he just,
but at the end of the day, he didn't do anything either.
Right.
He didn't kill him.
He was shocked, I guess.
I don't know if he was shocked. Again, there could have been that there was a reason before to kill the Egyptian to stop from hitting continuing to harass the Hebrew slave. And here, Moshe Rabbeinu didn't have to kill him.
We didn't know what they were fighting about.
I don't know. But
they were fighting about telling Pharaoh about Moshe.
They're fighting before. We only find they're trying to tell about Moshe after Moshe comes over to them and rebukes them,
they
not
knew,
before.
They knew about Moshe before.
It doesn't say. I'm not aware of that.
They wouldn't have actually said, "Are you going to kill me like this? Kill the Egyptian."
The point is that this all came as a result of Moshe saying something to them,
right,
for Moshe rebuking them. It doesn't. I'm not. Maybe somebody says that, but I'm saying it doesn't seem like, you know, they were already thinking of telling on Moshe. It was only after Moshe came to them and rebuked them that they went. They knew about it, but it only seems that they were ready to go and rebuke, ready to go to Paro after he rebuked.
Right.
Okay. So that's this thought from the Bar Yosef on this part.
Now, Bar Yosef, is that acronym, or is that was his name?
That was the name of the book.
Of the book?
Yeah, his name was Rabbi Yosef Salant.
Salant.
But he was
Spadi, right?
No.
No?
No.
The Salante is not a Spadi?
No.
And you say Dove, you say Be'er.
Be'er means well. Be'er. Be'ez Aleph Resh. Be'er Yosef, the well of Yosef.
The well.
Right. And he called them Salant. So his commentary on the Chumash, he called it Be'er Yosef. I don't know. 100 years ago, 150 years ago.
The assembly, he lived after Rashi.
This way after. Yeah. This is a more contemporary commentary. Okay. Next thing I want to share with you is, okay, Moshe Rabbeinu runs away. So on page 298, after Moshe comes to Midian, and he's by the well, and he chases away, and the daughters of Yisro come, and he saves them. So, Pasuk Yud Ches. Vatavayna Ruel Avihen, they came to rule their father, Vayomer, and he said, Madu Mihatem Bay Hayoim. Why did you hurry back so quickly? You know, how did you get your job done so quickly today more than any other day? Vatoymarna, and they said, Ishmitri Tzilonami Yaharoyim. An Egyptian man saved us from the shepherds, Vagam Deloilanu, and he actually drew the water for us, Vayashka Satsain, and he watered the sheep. So they said, they called the Moshe an Ishmitri, an Egyptian man. So there is a medrash that says that HaKadosh Baruch Hu chastised Moshe for allowing himself to be called an Egyptian and not basically saying he was a Ivri, he was a Hebrew. The way the Medrash says it is that when Moshe Rabbeinu, when it was decreed upon Moshe Rabbeinu after Mei Meriva that he wouldn't enter the land of Israel, so we know that Moshe Rabbeinu offered many prayers to be able to, for that decree to be rescinded. One of the prayers Moshe said to Hashem was, the bones of Yosef enter the land of Israel and I'm not going to enter? So HaKadosh Baruch Hu said to him, look, basically, the one who admits that he came from this land, he gets buried. The one who doesn't get buried.
Yosef
referred to himself. Now the way the Medrash says is like this. The Medrash says, right, the Medrash says that when his mistress tried to seduce him and then he ran away, so she said, Ish Ivri, a Hebrew man came on me. Which means that when she was talking about who harassed her, she called him a Hebrew man, meaning she used a Hebrew man to deride him. Later on, when Moshe meets the Sarah Mashkin, the wine butler in the jail, and he tells him that I have done nothing wrong, I was kidnapped. Yosef says, Ki gunav gunafti me'eretz Ivrim, I was stolen away from the lands of the Hebrews. So Rashi says, Rabbeinu Shlomo says to Moshe, he admitted that he was an Ivri.
Always.
You didn't. And therefore, he gets buried, you don't get buried.
He can't be an Egyptian, Joe.
He could have, but he didn't. They didn't know that, and he didn't identify himself as an Ivri.
So
the thing is like this. It's very interesting that, you know, when we read this Medrash, it sounds like, you know, Moshe Rabbeinu should have stood up and said he was an Ivri. Why? Why? I mean, bottom line, he was an Egyptian, right? He was Egyptian. They called him Egyptian because he looked Egyptian. Why was it so important to go ahead and say that he was an Ivri? Well, you may say, you know, how could you not? If you're an Ivri, if you're a Jew, how could you not? How can you allow yourself to be called a Mitzri? You should, of course, say that you're a Jew. The Ber Yosef explains it in the following way. The way he explains it is that Moshe Rabbeinu actually missed out on an opportunity to bring praise to Jews. He could have brought praise to the Ivrim if he would have said right away that he's an Ivri. Meaning. The whole scenario here is that these are the daughters of Yisrael, right? And the daughters of Yisrael says, how'd you get here so fast? So they said, an Egyptian man saved us. Moshe Rabbeinu tells the Medrash, Moshe Rabbeinu should have said, no, I'm not Egyptian, I'm an Ivri. Which means Moshe Rabbeinu should have pointed out who saved you, not an Egyptian, but an Ivri saved you. And that actually would have brought praise in the eyes of Yisrael. Because the Medrash tells us, the famous Medrash, the Gemara, that Yisrael was one of Paro's advisors. And when Paro wanted to enslave the Jewish people, Yisrael didn't want it to happen. Yisrael's impression of the Egyptians were that they're very cruel people. They're taking innocent people, they're enslaving them, oppressing them. His impression is he looks at the Egyptians as very, very cruel. Now, he finds an Egyptian that was very helpful. So what does he say to himself? Oh, I guess not all Egyptians are this way. You have some good Egyptians also. So what was happening right now is that when they said an Egyptian saved us, and Yisrael was impressed by that, basically, he became impressed with Egyptians when he could have been impressed with an Ivri, with a Hebrew. That's what he could become impressed with. And perhaps knowing Moshe Rabbeinu's whole background, everything that he went through, but so what happened here was Moshe had an opportunity to actually say, who saved? An Ivri saved. An Ivri saved. And Ivri, again, eventually Yisroel found out who this Moshe was, that he was an Ivri. But initially, he didn't know he was an Ivri. And initially, he thought he was an Egyptian. So initially, the praise or the positive impression that Yisroel is given, he's attributing it to an Egyptian when he could have attributed it to an Ivri. So that's where Moshe Rabbeinu fell short here. Moshe Rabbeinu fell short here, not so much like, where's your Jewish pride? But it's more like, you had a chance to make a Kiddush Hashem. You had a chance to sanctify Hashem's name. You had a chance to bring praise to the Ivrim. And you didn't. That's the problem. Yosef, on the other hand, what happened by Yosef? His mistress is trying to deride him for being a Hebrew. Right. He says to the Sarah Mashmuth, the wine butler, I'm innocent. I was stolen from the land of the Hebrews. He was trying to say, we don't do that kind of stuff. That kind of thing. But right now, the point here is that the Medrash speaks out what he said to the Sarah Mashkin. He doesn't say to Pari who's an Ivri. He didn't say it, the Sarah Mashkin said it.
No, but I thought when he came in front of him, the power was from
Hashem. It doesn't say he's an Ivri. But the way the Medrash points it out is the fact that he says specifically to the wine butler, I'm an Ivri. And the Medrash is saying, why did he do that? Why did he mention I was stolen from the Hebrews? Who cares where you're stolen from? The point is to say that the Medrash says the point is to say that he was trying to say, you know, I'm innocent. I'm here for no reason. I am from the Ivrim. I'm from the Hebrews. We don't do that kind of stuff. So he was bringing praise upon the Ivrim.
Right.
And therefore, Hashem says, you brought praise upon the land of the Ivrim. Therefore, you could be buried in the land of the Ivrim. What were you saying?
No, I was trying to go into the idea of the praise and so forth. But it may have been dangerous if he said, I'm a Hebrew. Maybe he would have killed him. Just, you know, leave McGillney's in jail too, I guess.
Well, I don't know about that, but the way the Medrash is saying is the way the Medrash is saying that Moshe, that Yosef brought praise to the land of the Ivrim and Moshe didn't, and Rabbi Yosef explaining that to me that Moshe could have gotten the credit for the Ivrim when he instead it went to the Mitzrim. Now the Rabbi Yosef himself points out, but again, it's not like Yisrael ever found out who Moshe was. He found out Moshe eventually found out Moshe was an Ivri.
Yeah.
Okay, so eventually the credit does go to the Ivrim. But Moshe didn't do it right away. So my understanding of that would be, I'm not saying that's what he was doing, but Yosef is saying...
Did he marry his daughter before he knew
he
was a Jew?
No, I highly doubt that. I think by the time Moshe was invited to be in the house, we could assume that that Moshe told him everything about himself. Mm-hmm. But what I think the issue, the difference between whether Yisrael finds out about it right away or not, is basically, you know, when Yisrael finds out that his daughters were saved, that makes the strongest impression,
right?
So if the strongest impression is Egyptian, then he finds out, oh, you're not Egyptian, you're a Hebrew. Oh, that's nice. It's like the impression, the positive impression is not the same. You know, the initial impression, the initial joy of his daughters being saved, that's when you have the strongest impression of who's saved.
Not here when he found out he was a Jew.
Well, I'm trying to say that that it's not a question of being happier. Right. But the point is that, you know, you think somebody did something and, oh, it was you. It's like, oh, it was you. Not like, wow, it was you.
Right.
When it's the first time, then it's like, wow, it's you.
Right.
So that was the kind of impression Moshe could have made upon Yisrael about the Ivrim, and that's what was lost. Mm-hmm. So later on, he found out that he was an Ivri, and like you're saying, maybe he was happier that he was an Ivri. But the point is, though, the impression wasn't the same. It was already kind of old news, and therefore that was why there was no the impression Moshe could have made was that opportunity was lost.
It was Egyptian,